Support for WOSU comes from OSU Marketing. In the latest episode of Now at Ohio State, two experts discuss the benefits of regenerative farming techniques and how caring for soil can help improve sustainability. Listen on Apple and Google Podcasts or visit osu.edu/now.
This podcast was recorded Thursday, August 24th at 10:33 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear this. Yeah, like we'll learn how to pronounce the name of a now leading Republican candidate for president.
My name's Vivek Ramaswamy.
Vivek Ramaswamy. Vivek, like cake. Vivek Ramaswamy. Vivek Ramaswamy. Okay, we got it. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters, those shrewd politicians, like Central Ohio's own Vivek Ramaswamy, who immediately raised his hand and held it up high when asked if he would support a convicted felon to be president of the United States. I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up on the podcast, a U.S. Senate candidate gets a pretty good interest rate on a loan to fund his campaign. But first, the Abortion Rights Amendment campaign is just getting going here in Ohio, and conservatives are having a hard time getting on the same page. Now, they are in the same chapter. They oppose abortion rights, by and large. They believe ending a pregnancy for any reason other than the life of the mother is immoral and should be against the law. That's why conservatives cheered when last summer the U.S. Supreme Court overruled Roe v. Wade and left it to politicians and thereby voters to decide when life begins and when abortion should be banned, allowed, and/or regulated. And that's the problem conservatives face. In poll after poll, a clear majority of Americans believe abortion should be legal in most cases. A majority of Americans support abortion rights, but they also support restrictions. That's why in state after state, even in conservative ones, voters have voted on the side of abortion rights. Ohio is next. And if the issue one vote from earlier this month was an indicator, which many believe it was, Ohio could join them in November. And that has caused a rift between, shall we call them, pragmatic Republicans and the more strident Republicans. The strident Republicans don't want to give an inch. They want a big victory with the Dobbs decision, and they want abortion banned. The pragmatic Republicans see the writing on the wall and are perhaps willing to compromise. That rift was on display this week when Ohio Right to Life parted ways with its spokeswoman Lizzie Marbach, put Marbach in the strident category. On social media, she called an abortion rights supporter a, quote, murderous liar. She also posted that supporters of abortion rights should not be allowed in the medical profession. Marbach told The Plain Dealer her bosses at Ohio Right to Life had problems with her bold descriptions of abortion as murder or as evil. Ohio Right to Life did not necessarily disagree. It says it moved Marbach out of her role as communications director because of concerns about her tone and tenor. Joining us now to discuss the state of conservatives in this campaign for and against constitutional protections for abortion rights is a man who always has an appropriate tone and tenor, Republican strategist Terry Casey. Welcome, Terry.
Good morning.
Now, this is your first appearance, so to speak, appearance in an audio sense, on Snollygoster.
Absolutely. We'll see if it's the last, if I get voted off the island or not.
Terry, if you're a fan of WOSU Public Media, you know he is a pioneer, a member of the Columbus on the Record political panel on our TV show on WOSU TV. Terry, before the Dobbs decision, I would say it was easy for Republican politicians. Abortion is wrong. It should be banned. Now, with Roe overturned, it's not so easy, right?
Governing is always harder than being an ideologue and offering your personal opinion or your position. So governance is a challenge.
So were Republicans surprised when it became harder to govern abortion rights than it is just to oppose Roe versus Wade?
That's the way life is, and the way, whether it's at the federal level or state or local level, it's always harder to deal with the day-to-day real life issues. And clearly, as we head into this fall and the abortion question, we saw some previews of it in the issue one on August 8th, when the people trying to push this had two different committees, and in my opinion, I said on your show, five different messages. So clearly, if you're going to win, it takes money. You got to have players who are experienced on statewide issues, but you got to figure out what the right message is that connects with a majority of the voting population. And that's not always easy, because it isn't just the 5 or 10% of your hardcore base one way or the other that you got to persuade. There's a lot of people in the middle.
Yeah, and time is short. We're approaching the beginning of September, so you have all of September, all of October, and you know the first few days in November to win this campaign for whichever side is going to prevail. So what will that message be for opponents of abortion rights?
You're asking me? Yeah. I don't know.
What do you think?
Well, the challenge is, if you could get everybody to sit down in their living room and read it line by line, they would discover that this potential amendment has some serious questions, like the first two words say an individual. And does an individual mean all adults 18 and over? Does it include 14, 15, 16-year-olds? It's unclear legally in the Constitution or in this amendment what that means, and how a court might rule in the future. And then there's a couple other sections of it. What does it really mean? Because it says, including these five things, including abortion, but not limited to. And so there's different arguments. And the question is, who can come forth credibly and raise those questions and provide believable answers on both sides?
So you're basically saying it's not clear enough, and it allows for things, perhaps unintended consequences down the road. Is that a message that will work with voters?
Well, the problem is they tried early in the year some commercials that got into cross-dressing and gender affirmation and other kind of things that maybe that relates to reproductive rights or freedoms. Maybe it doesn't. That's all part of the debate. But the question, just as happened in August with issue one, whoever defines the issue first tends to win the campaign. So that's why it gets back to this magic thing called money, because right now the worrisome thing is if Right to Life and certain other conservative groups are divided and wanting to go different directions, the question is, who's in charge of the campaign? Do they have a plan? Do they have a pathway? Do they have a message?
Yeah.
So lots of questions. There's still time, but remember, we're just a little over a month away from when early voting will start in October.
Yeah, it's like issue one. It's going to be a short but intense campaign. You know, this came up in the presidential debate this week, the Republican presidential debate on Fox News. Nikki Haley participated in a back and forth about how the federal government should handle abortion rights. Let's take a listen.
When it comes to a federal ban, let's be honest with the American people and say it will take 60 Senate votes. It will take a majority of the House. So in order to do that, let's find consensus.
Consensus. That's hard to do in the Republican Party right now. Correct, Terry?
It's a little bit like herding cats, if you know what I mean. And some of these cats are big cats.
So is there any, I mean, because there are folks who really, truly believe abortion is wrong. They really do. And they think if life begins at conception, and anything less than that, or even maybe a 6-week, you know, the fetal heart activity ban, is anything other than that is unacceptable. Will those folks ever agree to restrictions that are more permissible of abortions earlier in a pregnancy?
That's one of the questions. And if you note, before that ballot issue in August, Governor DeWine tried to say maybe we need to figure out something that's a little closer to the middle that can get a greater percentage of the majority backing and believing in. Nikki Haley and some others tried to float that a little bit. Last night at the debate, there were some things that came up on maybe a 15-week as something people can more agree upon. But again, there are diehards on both sides of the abortion issue who firmly believe what they believe, and how do you get a compromise? How do you, again, herd the cats, yeah, get common sense belief on it? And there's also a big division among conservatives who believe, hey, the states ought to be it. Let each state decide. But then there's people that obviously aren't happy. As I pointed out to someone, we're sitting in Ohio right now, but we have this thing called the interstate highways, where it's easy to go to Kentucky or Michigan or Pennsylvania or Chicago. which has different rules and different operations. Yeah. So again, that's part of the challenge of America. We got a wide variety of opinions. How do you come up with a consensus that people can live with?
Let's talk about this word ban for a minute. It seems pretty simple. A ban means you cannot do it. So Nikki Haley floated the idea that she might support a 15-week ban on abortions. Now, abortion rights supporters say that's a ban on abortion. So basically what this would do is this would allow for abortions up to 15 weeks of a pregnancy. The CDC says that 93% of abortions are performed at or before 13 weeks of gestation. So a 15-week ban, Terry, really isn't a ban. It's legalizing abortion in this country in nearly all cases, correct?
Mike, you're getting picky over words and getting very specific, and that's part of the problem of both sides want to kind of paint the extreme picture. And that's challenging because the polling, as I've studied it over the years and decades, there's a lot of shades of gray as far as where the American people are at. And then you get into classic questions of rape and incest. And then what does the health of the mother mean? Does that mean a threat to her living or dying? Or is that more mental health? And what kind of mental health? So again, that's part of the complication and part of what might get debated this fall in the campaign of what does that amendment mean? What does it limit or not limit? So there's a lot of shades of gray. But again, I get back to the point of in the fall campaign, whoever defines the issue first is more likely to win. And then that's a function of money and how well you craft your message.
When does that begin? We are, 10 days away from Labor Day or so, and that's traditionally the start of the fall campaign. This is a very intense campaign because it has really been no lead up. You could call issue one a bit of a lead up, but it's going to, like you said, we're about a month away from early voting. So,
To quote the Tom Cruise movie that he was in when the famous line was, "Show me the money will determine who's kind of first." And my bet would be that, and again, in the issue one on August 8th, there was so much money on both sides from out of state. You're going to see that again this fall. But the question is, who has the money right after Labor Day to start defining the issue? And then that forces the other side to play catch up, which is not always easy.
Yeah, and the no side there, those who oppose the 60% threshold to pass an amendment to the Constitution, they outspent the yes side basically 3-1 in that campaign, according to the most recent campaign financial disclosures. Terry, hang on one sec. We'll be right back. We'll talk about the GOP debate when Snollig Oster continues.
Want to learn how to be a master of business without going back to school? Listen to the Planet Money MBA. No suits, no PowerPoints, just the secrets of business school delivered straight to your ears. Every Wednesday till Labor Day on Planet Money from NPR.
This is Snollig Oster from WOSU Public Media. Terry Casey, Republican strategist. You watched the big debate on Fox News. All the Republican candidates were there except the frontrunner, Donald Trump. What'd you think?
Well, to be blunt, I was rather disappointed in the setup with the how the audience played into applauding, booing, doing other kind of things. But I also thought it was very much of a mishmash because the moderators, unlike a Mike Thompson or a Colleen Marshall in Columbus, didn't regulate the people answering the questions very well. They just ran over time and there was no consequences and people jumping in back and forth. It was, and again, it's challenging with eight people compared to having two, but I thought a lot of the format was rather mishmashy and confusing. And in some ways, Donald Trump, maybe the smartest thing was not being there because it was very confusing at times in terms of who had how much time and who was jumping in and who was attacking each other back and forth.
Yeah, as a debate moderator, I always have a lot of sympathy for moderators because unless you cut the mics, it's almost impossible to stop candidates from going over time. And they used to have the doorbell. Remember they had the doorbell last year or last cycle on Fox News, but apparently that doorbell was causing dogs to bark all around the country. So they changed the bell. So fun fact to know.
They kind of would ring the bell, but you know, normally you kind of understand when the bell rings, you finish your sentence. Yeah. And put a period
No.
But they went on and on and on. And yeah. Mike Pence times was the biggest violator, but the different jumping in, it made it very confusing, but I also make the point this was the first debate. It's kind of like judging the OSU football season by the first quarter of the game against Western Kentucky. It's not always the definitive real test of things.
But the first debate in the 2016 cycle, if you want to go back that far, that was about this time of year, August of 2015, about the same point in the cycle, Donald Trump made his debut, and the rest is history. Was there anybody in this debate that could replicate, not replicate, but could take that same path?
I don't think so, because you just don't have the same chemistry. And remember, back then in Cleveland in that first debate in 16, there was this guy sitting there with $130 million and 100% name ID named Jeb Bush, faded into the word work awful quickly. So there's, and of course, I think there were 10 or 11 people on the stage then, which is even bigger kind of a mishmash of things.
They had the kiddie table. Remember that back then? They had the two debates.
It was absolutely. So at least we were down to eight.
Yeah.
And with all due respect, the former Arkansas governor is interesting, and he's an adult, and the poor North Dakota governor that injured his leg, et cetera. But it'd be better if there were only six, but it's still very much of a mishmash and hard to sort out. And it's going to take some time. And again, with Trump and his situation, we've never had a playbook like this.
Yeah. I mean, when they asked them to raise their hand if they would support President Trump if he was convicted of a felony, that was a striking moment.
Absolutely. Some people were a little slow on the draw.
Ron DeSantis and Chris Christie, but too, anyway.
Right. But in all honesty, asking people hypothetical questions is in a deposition, you always avoid those because there's no perfect way to answer those questions.
So what would have happened if nobody raised their hand and say, I don't want to answer a hypothetical?
That would have been interesting. But again, they couldn't all coordinate. So yeah. But it
just shows you where the party is right now. Until this all plays out, we don't know how it's going to play out. But just think about it. Hi, we have a convicted felon who's going to be president. Will you support him? In any other time, they'd be like, no, hell no. But right now.
Well, and then the question is convicted of what? And then there's questions of does under the Constitution, does, quote, insurrection disqualify somebody? There's a lot of tangled mishmash. You're going to have lots to talk about on this program and Columbus on the Record and all sides.
Vivek Ramaswamy, let me get it right. Vivek Ramaswamy is the new shiny ornament, sort of not a front runner, but the new one we're all paying attention to. Does he have any staying power? His positions are pretty out there. He doesn't support Ukraine, and he doesn't think we should be spending as much money as we're sending to Ukraine. And he was the first to raise his hand when said we should put Trump in office if he's a convicted felon.
Well, he's interesting, and especially since he actually lives in Upper Arlington and was born in Ohio. So Ohio's got a chance to elect an Ohioan. But at his age, and clearly most of the candidates kind of ganged up and beat up on him. Surprisingly, DeSantis didn't get beat up that much, but Ramaswamy did. And his youth and energy are interesting, but how long will it last?
Yep, we will see. Terry Casey, Republican strategist, thanks for joining us here on Snollygoster.
Thank you.
We'll have you back, Terry.
Thanks.
All right. Time now for our Snollygoster of the Week segment, where we honor the shrewdest politician or political move of the week. And this week, we give it to U.S. Senate candidate Matt Dolan. He chairs the Ohio Senate Finance Committee. He ran for Senate in 2022, losing in the primary to eventual winner J.D. Vance. And as you likely know, he's quite wealthy. His family owns the Cleveland Guardians, and he used a lot of his own money to fund that 2022 campaign. As first reported by Cleveland.com, financial disclosures recently filed show he took out a line of credit of up to $25 million to help fund his campaign. And the interest rate on that loan was 0.8%, less than 1%. That's a good rate. At the time, mortgages were at about 3%, and credit card and personal loan rates were much higher than that. Now, it gets complicated as to why a guy worth up to $41 million would borrow money for his campaign. There are tax advantages that your off-the-shelf H&R Block software can't handle. But that aside, the loan has raised questions of whether that super low rate given to Dolan by Morgan Stanley amounted to an illegal campaign contribution. Rules say loans have to be sort of in the ballpark of most loans given to regular folks. Still to come is the developments in this story. But for now, for getting that super low interest rate to fund his campaign, we give Matt Dolan our Snollygoster of the Week award. That'll do it for this week's edition of Snollygoster, which is part of the NPR network. As always, please be sure to leave us a good review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcast, and just tell your friends about us. For our student producer, Katie Genius, our audio engineer, Dalton Jones, and our digital producer, Michael DeBonis, I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.